Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, there's a crazy little...
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Tom Hayes in Boston, Massachusetts. Great show on the slab today, all the way from L.A., a great buddy of mine, one of the brightest and funniest and the most cool guys in comedy, and now in his acting. I'm going to read you a little bit of what I wrote yesterday. John Keating started his stage and screen career in Boston, Mass. As a comedian slash actor. Today he lives in Los Angeles and acts, writes, and performs. His credits include the recent animation product General Zed, films such as The Middle, Anger Management, and Criminal Minds. So we're going to have a little fun. John, welcome to the show, buddy.
Hey, Tom. How are you? Thanks for having me.
We're great. We had some great times in the car, kind of going back and forth to some gigs, and I always enjoyed your act. By the way, has the shadow of the crucifix ever been removed from your parents' room?
Well, yeah, no, I think so, because I think that my grandparents' house got sold, and then it got torn down, so it is gone. But maybe it's just kind of hovering there somewhere in between
you didn't
universes.
Didn't go in and take a sheetrock knife to it and
well, you should have. I should have got like an impression of it, you know, and just had that and just taken that with me.
Why don't you, that was one of the most memorable bits of your act. Why don't you, can you give us a little background on it and how the joke developed and what the joke is, because it's a gem.
Oh, sure. Oh, thank you. When I started doing stand-up like full-time, when I got rid of a day job, I ended up living with my grandparents for a couple of years, and that's kind of how it came about, where I was able to just start doing stand-up full-time. So what I was doing was I was staying in the room that my mom grew up in, and because I wasn't planning on staying there forever, I didn't really redecorate it at all. So it had very pink walls, and there was this giant crucifix on the wall. And as the joke goes, it was like slightly bigger than the one they actually hung Jesus on. It was gigantic. and it was right over the bed too. And it kind of freaked me out, you know, cause I grew up Irish Italian. Well, my grandparents, those grandparents were Italian, but I'm Irish Italian Catholic growing up, which is, you know, very uncommon in Boston. So it was kind of freaking me out. So I took it off. But the wall actually hadn't been painted in, you know, probably since my mom was living there. So there was this, like, faded shadow of the cross on the wall, which was actually creepier than the cross. So I put the cross back up. I was like, I'll just leave that there. That's fine.
You know, it's such a great visual. It reminds me of Christmas Story. It would be a scene right out of there. You know, so why don't you, I mean, I think your story is amazing because so few people make the leap. And, you know, I think, you know, I'm a pretty spiritual guy because of some of the events that have happened in my life. And that's really what it's all about. I mean, if you're not a spiritual person, you've got to trust in something to do what you did. So why don't you tell us your story. That's one of the things I like to get from the guest is, you know, when did you get the idea that you wanted to be in film and on stage, and what made you think that, you know, what was the draw? I think in my case, I was actually dragged into it. When I look back and connect the dots. And so what was it that drew you to it, and what gave you the guts to make the leap?
As a kid, I've always been into acting and growing up, I grew up like right in the midst of Star Wars, you know, so that really captured my imagination as a kid, and I wanted to do that. I wanted to be Han Solo. I thought being Han Solo and Indiana Jones were actual like job that you could, I mean, technically they are, I guess, but only one person gets to do it, but I thought that was like something you could aspire to, that and being Batman. I always wanted to be like a part of that world. I didn't understand it. It was just fascinating to me. It was like magic. And I also had a really just admiration, and I was a huge fan of stand-up comedy. I used to love when they used to do Star Search back in the day. The little, you know, 3 minutes of stand-up that they would show on the show, I was always, like, glued to the TV. I would sneak out of bed and watch, like, The Tonight Show. I used to love – one of my favorite things as a kid in summer vacation was because I got to watch David Letterman. I was always thrilled because I got to stay up late and watch David Letterman over summer vacation. So that was a big – it wasn't just being out of school. So I was a huge fan of that. I was always terrified of stand up and performing. I did some plays in elementary school and high school, but I didn't know what to, 'cause growing up in Boston, especially in the suburbs and very blue collar family, my dad worked for the MBTA his whole life. You don't get a lot of insight into what it's going to take to do that kind of world. My dad wanted me to work for the T. He was like, "Oh, I can get you a job there." And I knew I didn't want that.
He still does, probably.
No, he passed away, actually, yeah. But, yeah, he might still be
on. I read that on Facebook, wherever he is, if he still wants you to do that.
He probably does. Yeah, he probably does. So I didn't quite know what to do with that love of that stuff. And then in college, I went to Salem State for a couple of years, and I barely went to college. I met some guys that were doing a sketch group, and I was like, "Oh, that sounds great! That sounds like something I'd want to do." And so I got together with them, and I wrote some sketches, and we ended up all doing this public access show in Revere for a couple of years, called TV. Yeah, and it was great. We did like one show every 3 months because it took so long to film and put it all together. I mean, none of us knew what we were doing. But we got they were looking to do some kind of public access original programming or whatever. It was right down by the station was right down by where the movie theater is in Revere there off the circle.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the Squire, right by the Squire. I ended up living over there with Mark Scalia in that area, actually, for a couple of years. But the famous Squire.
There's some real sketch acting there.
yeah. Sketches and sketchy. So I started doing that, and then there was a woman that would come down and act in some of the sketches, and she knew Johnny Peasy over at Giggles and Lenny Clark, and she introduced me to them, and I had always dreamt of doing stand-up. And it just kind of just came about, and Johnny was like, "Well, here, you put together like 5 minutes. Can you give me a tape?" And I didn't know what that meant. So I literally filmed me doing stand-up in the studio that we filmed the
which was a huge jump.
And when I say studio, like the public access studio, it's literally like the size of someone's living room. It was with carpeted gray walls, kind of thing.
Right.
So I filmed it there. I didn't know what to do. And I was like, "Should I add laughs in?" And they're like, "No, I don't think that's probably right." So I gave it to her to give to him. And he was like, "Okay, cool, I'll put you on." And I ended up doing, he was doing a benefit at Giggles. This is in 1992. And it was over in the back room, not in actual Giggles, but in Prince, at the Prince house there, at the other side, like where they have like a little function room with the big stage. So it was actually pretty packed. So that was the first time I ever got on stage, and it went really well. I met Mark Scalia there for the first time, and him and I became friends for the rest of our life, which was great. So I started doing that, and then, I did stand up in Boston for a good 10 years after that. I was going in between working day jobs, not working day jobs for a while. I wasn't working a day job. Towards the end of the 90s into 2000, I was working as for all intents and purposes, like a video game tester for this software company with another.
Oh, that's right. I remember that. Yeah,
with Tim McIntyre. I actually worked there as well. And we both started around the same time. And then I got laid off from that. And then I had already planned on going to L.A. to visit the week I got laid off. So I was like, "Well, that feels like kind of like a sign." So I went to visit. And I really liked LA. Say again. I went to visit. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. All right.
Yeah, it seemed like a lag, but you're okay.
Okay, good. So I went to L.A. to visit. I really liked it. came back, and I was like, oh, maybe I should make plans to move there. So it took me about another year before I actually got up and running to move there. But I had ended up saving, because the place that laid me off called me back as a contractor. I ended up saving like $20,000 to move out there with, which was great. So it all kind of happened as it happened, and it ended up leading me out there in a really good position.
Nice. So when you got there, what happened? Comedy, stand-up?
I started with comedy. I was still going on the road here and there. I wasn't enjoying doing stand-up in L.A., but if you're not doing, because you're not really making any money at it doing it in L.A., if at all. And then when I was on the road, making money at it, I was like, well, why did I move to L.A. if I'm going to be on the road all the time? And I really wanted to act. That's always kind of been my where I wanted to end up. So I kind of segued out of doing stand-up and being on the road to more focusing just on acting. And the last time I was on stage doing stand-up was probably like 2007, 2008. As I did that, and as I focused more on that and go into like casting workshops and meeting casting directors and staying in town, and that's when stuff started coming in more with acting, and I got my first TV gig as a guest star on The Middle in 2011. So
nice. Was that how many episodes?
It was just one. It was just one episode. Actually, I don't know how if you know this or how many of your listeners know this. There are like designations as show roles go. Everybody knows like an extra, what an extra is, a background performer kind of thing.
Right.
Then there's a co-star, which is usually like five lines and under. Sometimes they're bigger parts. It depends on the show. But it's a smaller role designation, and it's obviously less pay. And then there's a guest star, which is the bigger, which is the really nice chunk of stuff. That's a level up. And then obviously the series regulars. Those are the kind of levels of acting. And there's a recurring
actor
as well. Yeah.
So your first shot was...
If you're on more than one episode, you're technically called recurring.
Yeah, pretty prestigious then.
Yeah. So getting a guest star as my first gig, it actually started off as a co-star. The Middle's cast by G. Charles Wright, who I met in workshops and was taking classes with, and who I've since become really close friends with. He was actually in my wedding. He called me, and I had gone in for that show about like six or seven times. And finally, he was like, "Oh, I heard your voice when I read this part." And so I went in, and it went really well. And it was only one line, but I'm in like two-thirds of the episode. So they ended up bumping up the co-star part to a guest star. So that was really helpful. So that was great. And then that helped me get another guest star on Anger Management with Charlie Sheen and Selma Blair, and that was a lot of fun. And it kind of just gone from
there. Great. And then what's then after that, there was is there another series that you're in? Or?
I did an episode of Criminal Minds last year. It was very small. That was funny. That was a co-star. So it was weird. I kind of went backwards a step. Yeah, but which is fine.
All right.
It's work. I don't care.
Absolutely. And it all adds up, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So what is the bulk of the work that you do then? I mean, I know you just did this thing with Gen Z, and you also...
Yeah, Gen Z,
I mean,
yeah,
we got to talk about you.
Go ahead. Oh, no, yeah, Gen
no,
Z
you
is
also
a,
did
an
a,
animated...
You wrote a comic strip. You wrote a comic strip for a while.
Yeah, I had a comic strip going for, from like, I want to say 2007 to 2012. I was doing like one a week. There's a couple hundred up there. That's on my website, if johnkeating.biz. It's free to view if you want to go look at it. And it was cool. I got published as a little indie comic by Hopper Comics in Austin, Texas. And I did a couple of conventions, selling the books and signing them. And that was a lot of fun. It was just something that I just always liked drawing. In fact, I even used the cross joke. I even used that as one of the strips. I just always liked drawing growing up, and I was a big fan of comic strips and newspaper comic strips, and it was something I always wanted to try, so I just kind of did it, and it was fun. It was a fun thing to do. I kind of stopped doing it because it got to be a little much. It would take me about like five hours to strip. I mean, it was a lot, and if it's not your actual gig, it can be a little time-consuming and get a little tedious. So I was like, I think I did what I wanted to do with that, and I might go back every once in a while and do another strip here and there.
Right. Yeah, I know, because I'm doing, you know, I'm putting out a, you know, one panel, two panel stuff right now myself, but I'm doing it digitally, which saves a ton of time. But it's still, you're right, if you want to get it right, it takes time.
Yeah. Yeah, because I would draw the characters on I always liked using pencil and Bristol board paper. I just liked the control I had over it. But then I would ink it and color it in, you know, in Photoshop, basically, in Illustrator and Photoshop,
okay, cool.
And then piece it all together. So it was really time consuming. It took a while.
Right. But
if I go back to it, I don't think I'm going to do color. I think I'm just going to do black and white.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, when I hear your story, I think if we had a, you know, one of these panel things, you know, where we had four or five comedians, the thread runs the same, you know, the same thing. I mean, my identification with the comic strips, if I read a newspaper, it was never like some other people, you know, go to sports or politics or anything. It was
right.
Always look at the theater section. And then look at the comics, you know.
Right, exactly.
And you start to, you know, you don't even think about it at first, but then after a while you just say, why was I drawn to that? I mean, I really think, you know, from my take in it now, is that we were really destined to do it. I mean, we were programmed. That was our DNA. We came here to do this, and to do anything else is, you know, just kind of a lie, you know. And I think, you know, in my case, that I was, you know, just amazed. I ended up in comedy in the most bizarre way, and probably wouldn't have got there. I would never have gone through the gymnastics of the open mics and all of that stuff. So I kind of leaped into it and then, you know, just forget it. And then you're a drug addict, you know?
Yeah. Well, so, that's the thing. I mean, when did you start? How old were you when you started?
Well,
was it later for you, or was it early on?
Yeah, I was. Well, first of all, my brother always left. I was born into an Irish Italian family, and the Italian side,
right,
they were magicians, and one of them was semi-professional. In fact, he was a president of the Pacific Coast Association of Magicians, and he was, you know, really skilled. But I never really knew him. I knew of him. You know, he was my uncle living in Monterey, and so, you know, I did it as a kid, but, you know, I never actually did birthday parties or anything, just for friends. And if you don't have a peer group, forget it. You're not going to last, because, you know, kids hate magic, and they just want to catch you. You're not entertaining anybody, you know. You're the enemy. And so I quickly stopped that. But I had it in me. I knew I had perfected a few things, and they were entertaining. And gave it up totally. And here I am making a sales call one day with my boss, and we're selling radiology film, went to the radiologist and asked him, I brought the boss down to close the deal. I was only on the job for a couple of months. And I said, I can't get this guy to close, commit. I said, you know, can you help me? He said, sure. So I said, hey, Doc, have you thought about my film? And he was in a pissy mood. And he said to me, yeah, I thought about it. And he says, as a matter of fact, if you show up here before a couple of months, I'll never buy your film. So I took that as a signal he wasn't in the mood.
Yeah.
And I headed for the door. And this boss takes out this cheap little cylinder and puts a stack of nickels. And, of course, there was a false bottom on it. And then, you know, there was only really one real nickel. The rest looked like nickels. And he slid the thing on the top, and he looked, and I'm horrified. At this point, I'm horrified that he didn't take the signal to leave. And he said, hey, Doc, before I show, I want to show you what happens every time you put a piece of competitive film up instead of ours. And the money disappeared. And I'm looking at the doctor thinking, when does this guy kick us in the ass and tell us never to come back? And instead, he starts laughing. And over a 10-year period, that guy bought over $1 million worth of film from us.
Oh,
and
wow.
So I had the trick. I was a pack rat. I had the kid sitting in my attic at my house. I ran up and got it. And I was about 26, 27 years old, and I said, I'm going to be rich. I'm going to close every single account. Well, that didn't happen. But what did happen was the clients and the prospects were going, do another one. You know, do another one.
Yeah.
They wanted to be entertained. And so I headed for Little Jack Corner's joke shop and bought all the tricks I knew as a kid, and called up my uncle in Monterey, and I said, I'm in trouble. you know, I got a, so he introduced me to a couple of magic clubs here in Boston, and so here I am, and again, it ends up being right. You know, it's just, this is what we were born to do. In fact, my brother always tells me, he says, remember the time you took that aptitude course after getting a master's degree in economics because you still didn't know what you wanted to do? And after 2 days of testing, it told you to be an entertainer and you were furious. So
it's like you're fighting against your own destiny. Yeah.
Exactly. And so I leaned toward comedy magic. I mean, that was just, you know, why be serious about this stuff? Do all these, it was great visual and stuff. And then I saw Steve Martin, and before he really got huge, it was that level before he actually sold out Symphony Hall, and half of his act was comedy magic. And I was like, I can do that. And then cable came out, and here I am in my house in the suburbs, you know, working as a sales rep, and then Showtime, I walk by the screen and says, looking for the funniest person in America, send us a video. So somebody had taken a video of a particular effect I did, threw it in the mail, and forgot about it for like a year, and then totally forgot about it because they came to Boston and did all these auditions for a year in every club with the likes of Stephen Wright, with the likes of Sweeney, and all the greats, you know.
Yeah.
And Paul of And all of a sudden, one day after a year, and then they was moving this thing toward regional runoffs and auditions. And I said, I can't stand up to that competition. And one day I got a call, and it was Showtime Cable, and I said, you won.
And you were doing something kind of totally different, though, than what they were doing, too. So you didn't need
exactly.
You know what I mean?
It was novel. Yeah. You're right. I was lucky to have somebody who was my stooge, who was hysterical. So it was a kind of combination thing. And I'm arguing with, I said, no, you made a mistake. You know, this, and they're going, no, you're the winner. And that immediately got press. And then I had taken a class with Billy Downs and Paul Barclay. And so they called me up and they said, come on in. You know, they wanted to ride the all the press and publicity I was getting.
Sure, of course, yeah.
And comedy they paid me.
The original Comedy Connection, yeah.
Yeah, so not only get laughs, I got paid, and that was it. It was over. So, you know, I that's why I wanted to ask you this story, because I really, truly believe that, you know, there's a destiny component to this. And when you, that's the thing that you start to trust, and then you do brave things like you've done to really follow your passion. And kudos to you.
Oh, well, thank you.
So,
it's funny when you were talking about being a little kid and stuff. I remember, you know, for like sixth grade and fifth grade, like public speaking stuff, I would always do bits from comedian. I would do George Carlin, or I would do Bill Cosby or somebody like that, you know. You know, Bill Cosby without.
Yeah, well, I was always picked. I was always picked as the lead in all the school plays. You know, they picked me.
Yeah.
I was always got the lead. Not that I necessarily wanted it, but that's what, you know, evidently they saw. So I had enough over the other kids that I could, you know, pull that off. So, you know, you look back and you're going, you know, this is strange.
it's a weird road that gets you to where you are.
Yeah. So now. Now, how do you do okay financially with this? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, I do all right. Good. And I do some teaching. I teach an audition techniques class, which I'm really enjoying. I just started doing that this year, and I've been really enjoying that. And I coach people on auditions as well, privately. So, and I just really get a kick out of that. I like working with actors. I think at some point I would like to get into some directing. Because I do really like working with actors, and I love seeing the light turn on in them when they really click into it and get it.
Yep.
I've just really been enjoying that. And then this past year, I got I did a movie a couple of years ago that we're waiting to. It's in post right now. I did it. It was like we filmed it last year. Called The Concessionaires Must Die, and I actually did a rewrite with the director on the shooting draft of it. So that was a lot of fun. And then I'm one of the leads in the movie. Stan Lee has a cameo in the movie. We got the lead of it is David Blue, who was on Stargate Universe. He was a series regular on Stargate Universe. Dan Lauria from The Wonder Years is in it. It's about the dying days of a single screen movie theater, old movie house that we filmed up in Fresno.
Nice.
It was beautiful, this gorgeous like cathedral movie palace. We filmed up there for 2 weeks. It was really great. They were wonderful. The trailer is online. The Concessionaires Must Die. If you want to check that out, and then I did. I voiced a character at one of the leads in this animated show that should be coming out later this year. But the trailer just got released, and Huffington Post just did a really nice write up on it called Gen Z. Meaning like Generation Z, basically. The creator of it is English. Hayden Black, he created a funny show called Goodnight Burbank that had Laura Silverman in it and Dominic Moynihan and John Barrowman from Doctor Who and Torchwood. So this the animated show is about these four gamers that meet online. They're all like millennials, and their lives are all kind of falling to pieces. And they end up getting in a place together, and I play Huey. But one of the big things about the show is the lead character on the show is transgender, and the actress voicing her is also transgender, which is really cool and has never been done before, strangely enough.
Interesting. So she's got the authentic voice then.
Yeah. She is the character. You know, obviously not.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Jane Wiedlin from the Go-Go's is voicing a character in it, which is really great. I got to meet her, and she was wonderful. And Richard Schiff.
So how many episodes did you do?
We did. It's weird. We did one long 45-minute, like that would have been the pilot, but it's going to be cut up into like 8 4-minute episodes, and it's going to probably be web released right now.
Nice.
I know Hayden's in talks with people, so we're not quite sure what the distribution is. I mean, it's all being done indie level, but there's a lot of people that are becoming interested in it. So we'll see what happens with it. I think it'll be out probably by the end of the year, probably by the fall. But the trailer's online now. You can see the trailer, and I'm in it, my character's
great.
In it a little in the trailer.
So if that goes,
yeah,
you'll get a part.
So yeah, hopefully, yeah. I mean, well, I'm one of the leads in it. So if it goes, I'm in it. So
nice.
So that's good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Was that experience like doing the voice versus?
It was a blast. I had not done any voiceover stuff to that extent before, and it's something I've always wanted to do. And that's where I'm really hoping it goes, because it'll be a nice kind of kickstart into that world. But it was so much fun because we did the producer of the sound engineer and the sound producer on the show is worked on Futurama, so he's amazing. He's just a pro, and he has his own studio, and we went to it, and he has like about 3 or 4 mics set up, and so we actually all were in the room together. Playing off
great.
Of each other, which was a lot of fun. And every once in a while, you'd have to do a pickup or whatever by yourself. But for the most part, we're all playing off each other, and you can really tell. Like, it really ups the level of the voice acting. And
oh, sure.
So
it's spontaneous then.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
We were there. We recorded the whole thing in a Saturday in January, and we were probably there about, like, good 6 hours, 7 hours, and it was so much fun. I really enjoyed it.
That's great. That's great. I'm actually doing that independently right now.
Oh, cool.
Through, again, a lot of serendipity. I don't know if you were working around with Tammy Pooler from Portland.
I think
great gal, great stand-up, and she took a couple of years off because she's got 4 retail. Oh, by the way, they're giving it a signal. For those of you who are listening live, we will lose you in a couple of minutes, but we will not lose the podcast. So the part you missed, just come back in and listen to the rest of the show for the next 15 minutes. But anyway, Tammy came back to comedy after 2 years out, and we worked one show together. And she asked, ironically, she asked me something about a bit she wanted to try that was about her father, who could not read, would read, pretend he was reading fairy tales and get them all mixed up. So, Little Red Riding Hood really went to visit the bears and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, he was just
very,
making
very
up as he went along.
Yeah, he would make it up, and it was all, so she had this warped sense of all the fairy tales. So she did the bit. I said, don't be afraid of it. I said, get up there and do it. And she did, and so, we started to talk again. We would had always, she'd actually been a customer of ours when we created the toys based on the Boston Bean. And so I heard these amazing stories from her, equivalent to anything that David Sedaris has ever done, and about growing up in Maine in a trailer park. And I said, I had just gone to Apple at that time, and they were teaching me everything, technical and, with iMovie, et cetera. And I said, I'm coming up there. This stuff has to be recorded and has to be put up on YouTube. So I did about 30 videos, either, videoing her in person and or talking over the phone with the voice recorder from the phone on. And then I would, put in the sound and then just build images around the story she was telling.
Oh, that's great.
And they're hysterical. Yeah. They're hysterical. So one day, I was doing this radio show with, some friends and mostly comedy, and I put the phone down, and here I was dead in the water because we had no investment left to keep producing. And when I put the phone down, the little voice that talks to us once in a while says, stupid. Do a kids radio show. You don't need any money to do that. And I mentioned it to her, and she says, I don't get it. And I said, well, here's the two characters. And then on the way to a gig, I took the phone out, and we blew out a perfect story in totally ad-libbing in about 5 or 6 minutes, and looked at each other in horror when we got through and said, where'd that come from? And I had convinced her. She's got a pretty good voice, and funny. She wanted to do some comedy rap things, and I encouraged her to do it. And so she found a sound engineer in Portland who's a genius. He's a heavy metal rocker, but he's professionally trained. Went to school as a sound engineer, and he's meticulous and perfect. And here we were in a 3-decker in Portland, and we went in, and in a matter of 3 hours banged out 5 8-minute bits that were perfect. In fact, he was going kind of crazy saying, I there's got to be something I can edit in here. And there wasn't, but he added all of the sound effects. So we've been doing that for about a year and a half, and it's truly mad. We produced over 9 comedy albums at this point, over an hour long each, and now it's morphing. It was a great training ground to break in new characters, develop the characters, create new stories and new worlds. And you're right, I guess you can't describe it to a stand-up who's never done it. How exciting it is.
Yeah, it's great. It's really different. It's like, there's just so many, everything is very compartmentalized for acting, I noted. Like, commercial acting is so different than sitcom acting, which is so much different than dramatic acting or even like single camera comedy as opposed to like a multi-camera sitcom. Those are two different styles. Auditioning is a different style of acting than performing is, and voiceover is like a whole different animal. It's all these different skill sets that you you don't even need to master them all. You can just be good at a couple and make a good career out of it,
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but obviously, if you're skilled at one, I would think that if I
well, it's good to diversify. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because what it gave me the confidence in doing this that, number one, you can create a character using your voice and your intonations and a mindset. And, and I know that it would be, even more to do when it's a visual thing and you're doing video versus audio. But, you're acting.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but the thing is, you don't see, you know what the character looks like, but you're voicing it before it's animated. So you are, it is similar to that. Like, you're just doing it, and it's all in your head, and then you see it later
right.
as it's animated to what you voiced, which is, yeah.
Well,
which
did
is
you
really
find
trippy.
That when you were doing it, one of the things we've noticed is we can actually see the story evolve. We're actually there.
Oh,
you
totally,
know,
yeah.
And,
yeah.
That's pretty bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's weird. It's similar to writing, if you're writing a script,
yeah,
or a
exactly.
story, that you're in it while you're writing it, and you can see it.
Yep.
But it's like a virtual reality kind of world.
Yeah, exactly. So now, that's good. That's a good segue. What kind of writing are you doing?
I'm actually working on, well, like I said, I did a rewrite on the shooting draft of Concessionaires Must Die, so that was really cool. And right now I'm working on a script about me and my sister kind of dealing with my dad and what happened to him. It's loosely based on that. You know, obviously there's a lot of dramatic effect taken. So that's what I'm working on right now. And I'm hoping that, I know that the director of Concessionaires Must Die, America Young, is a good friend of mine. She wants to direct this. And so we're going to look at, hopefully, maybe, you know, next year, trying to get it up and running and seeing what happens. We got a couple of name actors that are actually interested in it based on what I had written already. So that's my next goal, was to get that completed and go for
it. Is it a TV thing? Are you shooting for a TV? Or
no, this would be a film. This would be an indie film, yeah.
Nice. You know, what I'm hearing from you is such great passion and excitement and enthusiasm just being in the game.
Yeah, it really is. It's funny because I had worked a day job for like 10 years out here, and it ended last year. And I've been married for 6 years. It'll be 6 years in October. And my wife was like, "Yeah, you know, we're good. You don't need to go run out and find another day job." And then I started teaching, and so that's been great. And then whatever acting gigs I pick up or residuals and stuff. And so it's great. It's totally given me, I mean, I'm really blessed to have met Amber, and she's as wonderful as she is. She's just so supportive and such a huge, she's as passionate about it as I am. And
wow.
And it really gave me the freedom to go, oh, wow, I got this story I want to do, and just really feel like I'm really in the game and just really doing it again, you know, instead of having to worry about balancing a day job and then trying to do it as well, you know.
Well, don't you, you know, as far as I found on my end that you, when you make the leap and it's like, no, I'm going for this at all costs.
Yeah.
I may starve, I may whatever, I may lose a house,
right.
I may whatever, what economic, but I realize now that this is my true calling and that anything else will be much less than that and really not worth it. So,
yeah.
But don't you feel, because you're right in the middle of it out there, don't you feel that those are the people who really are the ones who do make it?
I think so. Yeah, and it depends on what you mean by making it, too. I mean, everybody has a different definition of that. But, yeah, I really think,
yeah, what
I
mean
it's funny
by making
because
it
when,
is you
when
get
I
to do
let
it.
Go of that. I'm sorry?
Right. Yeah, what I mean by making it is you get to do it. That's all.
Yeah, exactly. You get to do it, and you're doing it. And when you are doing it and pushing it like that and focusing on it, the other stuff kind of it really does fall into place. Like, you know, I started, my friend G that I mentioned before he teaches an audition class, and I have helped him out with it for years, and he would recommend people to me for coaching auditions. And then he's like, when I told him that I was losing the day job, he was like, oh, well, I've been wanting to open up a second night of the class, you know, and you'd be great to teach it. So that just kind of came up. So that was, oh, well, there's some income there, which is great that I didn't have.
Yep. I found that, I just hear the same story over and over again. That this is serendipity, synchronicity that happens that, wouldn't happen without that kind of leap. And I don't know if you ever, finally found the book that put it all together for me, because I started to notice these metaphysical things that you couldn't explain on a physical or, 3D level that didn't make sense. That all of a sudden, for example, when I started the company with Bing, if you did A didn't lead to B. Instead, A, what you thought you did A because you thought you would get to step B. But what would somehow mysteriously happen is you'd be at point D. And you'd be saying, wait a minute, how did we get here? You know, because there was no explanation of how you got there. I mean, does this make sense, what I'm saying? Did I lose you? Oh, don't tell me I lost you. Yeah, I did. I lost him. What a great show, though. I'll have to message him and whatever. And he won't be able, probably won't even be able to call back in because we went past our time. But John Keating, so much fun. I'm going to put this on the podcast. Those of you who are still with us, what a fun interview. Fun guy. We got to continue this because I want to follow John and his career and what's going on out there. So thanks for coming in and listening. And that's it for today. I appreciate you joining in. Thanks.